Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
The statistics are in from the Marion County Attorney's Office. How busy are they? Let's go in-depth with Marion County Attorney Ed Bull. So, Ed, it looks like your office has been real busy.
We have been busy, and we'd like to think that we are providing a service for Marion County that in the past hadn't been served to the level that it is now.
Okay, can you just give us a baseline number of cases that you are working with or have worked with over the past year?
The statistics that I'll give you here today are from the Criminal Justice Planning Department of the Iowa Division of Human Rights. The most recent numbers that came out earlier this year were from 2012. So just to be clear, we're working off 2012 numbers. In 2012, we processed 790 people who we convicted of crimes. 790 is more than 100 more. We, in 2009, the year before I took office, this office prosecuted and had 690 convictions. Now, to be clear, that number may seem like a lot. 790, we're talking about, 12 or 13 people a week who are being convicted of crimes. But that number doesn't tell the whole story, because one of the things that it does not include is deferred judgments. So if a person goes through the process and receives a deferred judgment by the court, they're not considered a conviction for the purpose of these records. So the reality, just taking a look at our 2012 numbers, I think there were probably 1,200 people who were held accountable for their crimes. 790 of them were convicted.
Is that a lot of people? How does that compare to other counties, population-wise?
Well, in the 5th Judicial District in Warren County, for example, we convicted more individuals in 2012 than Warren County did. I was a little bit surprised by that number. Warren County has a larger staff, they have more attorneys, and they certainly have a larger population base. Compared to Sioux County, which is what we tend to compare ourselves to, because although they're located in the northwest section of the state, they have very similar population numbers. When I took office, based on the previous census, we were within, I think, 16 or 18 people. They had a little bit more population growth over the last 10 years than we do. They're about 200 people more than we are now, and we had about 200 more convictions than they did.
And why is that? Higher crime?
I really don't know. It's tough to make those type of determinations. I don't know, for example, how many law enforcement officers are working. There's a direct correlation between how many law enforcement officers are working and how many crimes are being solved. And then at that point, how many criminals are being passed over to the juvenile or to the correctional system, the court system, for me to review. So it's a multi, there are many people who are involved. You have the criminal who's committing the crime, but you have to have law enforcement officers who are out there who are catching those individuals and bringing cases to the county attorney's office. Right now, one of the big differences between 2009 and now are the number of law enforcement officers we have. Marion County Sheriff's Department is full. They're fully staffed. Pella Police Department is fully staffed. In fact, they're adding an investigator position to be a full-time individual to investigate crimes. Pleasantville, for example, has more hours of service of law enforcement officers than they ever have before. So one of the things that's driving these numbers is the fact that law enforcement is out there doing a great job investigating crimes.
And Knoxville is fully staffed too?
That's my understanding as well.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Marion County Attorney Ed Bull. How about the aggressiveness of your office compared to theirs? I mean, I can see that some county attorneys might just relax, not want to go to court, not be aggressive, and it seems to me that your office might be being pretty aggressive on this. Is that the case?
Well, I think aggressive sometimes has a negative connotation to it. I think we're assertive when it comes to the prosecution of cases. I think what I mean by that is if there's a case and we have an ethical belief a conviction is likely, we're going to bring that charge before the court. Now, 790 convictions in 2012. Not all those went to trial. Just a small fraction went to trial. As a result of that, the reality is those are individuals who are coming into court who are accepting responsibility and being sentenced.
Is this causing, from your perspective, maybe an increased workload, even a hardship on our judges?
I can tell you that the advent of the EDMS system has changed the way in which our judges and our entire system works. I was critical of the EDMS system early on.
Electronic
data management system, paperless system for the court system. It has changed drastically the way we do business. There are parts of it I really like. There's parts of it that frustrate me. But I think it has changed the way in which our judges operate. And I think from just conversations with our judges, it's just very different now. There is a lot less personal attention. Judges we are filing things electronically through the court system. They're getting a copy of it. It pops up on their screen. They approve it. But they don't really have to talk to anyone. They may just be sitting at their desk hours at end approving motions and approving and signing orders. So it's very different than it was before.
Well, it sounds faster. Is it as good? I like communication between people and not computers.
Well, it does take away the personal aspect of the job. It takes away the need to communicate in person with individuals. I personally don't like that. I share your position. It's different. I think there are effectiveness to the system. It is nice to be able to look at a case online, not necessarily have to go grab a file. It also allows us to file documents after hours. We're not confined to working between 8 and 4:30. As long as the internet's working, I can be filing things from my home office. So in that regards, it has some strengths.
Does it decrease the workload of staff in general, or increase? I mean, we always hear that, you know, the computers save us time, but most of us know that that isn't necessarily the truth.
No, and in this case, it's not the truth. And at some point in the future, it may just change the way in which we do things. But right now, for my support staff, it has drastically increased their amount of work. The example is right now, if I file a document in the court system, we may get 2, 3, even 4 emails back from the clerk system that have to be reviewed. Because if you don't review them, we may miss something. Because the only way that we find out now whether or not a defense attorney has filed a motion is through that notification process through email. So you can't skip reviewing your emails at any given time. I think right now my notification section of the EDMS system, I have 500 active notifications. Every single day, we're getting hundreds of new notifications that have to be reviewed. It's different. It changes my staff now doesn't have to get up and ever go downstairs to the clerk's office and file something. So in that regards, maybe it's saving some time. But I think as I've talked with my support staff, it has been an increase in the amount of work. But as we get more proficient with the system, that may change.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Marion County Attorney Ed Bull. Do you have sufficient staff?
I think at this point I've talked with our Board of Supervisors about the need of potentially adding an additional staff person. I don't know if the resources exist to permit us to do that at this point. The reality is, going back to your initial question a few questions ago, we have a lot of cases. We have a lot of work. There is never a day off from this job. There's never a day where law enforcement gets the luxury of saying, you know what, we're not working today. We're taking this one off. Crime never stops. So it's one of those things of just when you think you're getting ahead, just when you think things are going to slow down, that's when you get a phone call that a new investigation is starting. And for every day that I come to work, I have what I know I need to accomplish. And almost every day, I have things that when I sat down in my chair at the beginning of the morning at 7:55 a.m., I had no idea was ever going to happen that day. And that's part of what makes this job so exciting and interesting for me. But it also keeps you up at night sometimes.
Now, I know that your office enforces the laws that are on the books, but as you look at it and as you've learned and grown as county attorney, do you ever look at our criminal justice system and think that, well, maybe we are a little bit out of balance, that maybe we're over prosecuting certain kinds of crimes and maybe under prosecuting others? I mean, the classic example is, you know, it seems that we're putting a lot of people that have, I don't know, let's just call them drug-related crimes in jail for long periods of time, yet we have Wall Street hedge fund leaders that are, you know, essentially robbing the public blind, destroying lives, and they're getting getting off scot-free. Do you ever think about the big issues like that?
Certainly. Whenever one of my jobs, first and foremost, my only job, is to do justice. And so you have to evaluate, how are you going to accomplish that goal? It's why we've created some of the diversion programs that we have, that we've talked about previously. I don't find in Marion County that we are sending the first-time drug offender to prison or jail. It just simply isn't happening. The numbers don't support it here in Marion County. Do we prosecute our fair share of drug cases? Absolutely. My view is, if the elements of the crime are met, we're going to file a charge and allow an individual the opportunity to accept responsibility and get assistance. Our goals of corrections are rehabilitation, punishment, and deterrence. And I don't ever ask the court, and nor do my assistants ask the court, to do something other than to satisfy those three ends. So I understand there's a lot of good talking heads out there about how many people are in prison or whether or not crack cocaine should be treated differently than base cocaine or powder cocaine, excuse me, whether or not we have a disproportionate number of minorities in prison. I think those are all good discussions to have, but I look at it as, I don't take into consideration those issues while I'm looking at whether or not the elements of a case have been met or not. Because I think to do so isn't doing my job, and is contrary to the oath I took when I was sworn in into this office.
Now, every year the legislature meets, they pass laws, the governor signs them. How do you keep up with that? Or is the criminal justice system, does it not change that much? Is that difficult to keep up with?
I think it really depends on the year. Some years we have some significant changes to not necessarily what is a crime, but what is the punishment. Have they changed the level of offense? A few years back, we saw some substantive changes in the domestic violence laws. We saw them add, for example, strangulation as a new offense level. You could never strangulate your domestic partner in the past, but we had to prove that it caused an injury or a significant injury to be a different level of offenses. Now the legislature has said, if you strangle someone and cause an injury, it's a felony now. So that was a change in the law. But to go back to your first part of the question, our County Attorneys Association would exist does an outstanding job of first keeping us aware during the legislative process as to what bills are possibly going up to the governor's office, so we know long in advance before a law is going to change. Then secondly, when the governor changes a law or implements a new law, at that point we're notified about the practical applications of how that's going to affect what we do. Sometimes it changes, we see some changes in OWI law. The County Attorneys Association was part of a push this year to try to allow us to get warrants for urine or blood samples on individuals charged with second offense OWI. I don't believe that's going to pass out this year, but that, for example, is something that we were trying to change the process, not necessarily the underlying crime, but aid us in the prosecution of getting drunk drivers off the streets.
What is the most common crime in Marion County?
I think that it's one of two things. I haven't crunched the numbers, but I would say our busiest docket is our interpersonal crimes, domestic violence, harassment, stalking crimes. And then we have, depending on weather, a significant number of OWIs operating while intoxicated.
Is there anything that can be done about either or both of those that isn't being done?
I think that's a great question, Bob. I haven't given a tremendous amount of thought to that. We've been dealing with a crisis of OWI or DWI, depending on the states across this nation. There are a lot of people who are killed each year and injured significantly by drunk drivers. I'm not certain what else we can do. The only thing that I think may deter an individual from drinking and driving is if the vehicle that you were in was forfeited when you committed the crime. There isn't a political will to do that. That's a significant consequence. The other reality is I'm not certain how effective that would be, because not a lot of people own their vehicle anymore. Almost everybody's got a lien or is leasing it. So that may not cause that big of a deterrence. The public marketing, for lack of a better term, public service announcements, I think everybody understands drinking and driving is wrong. And yet I think it's a crime that almost anyone in a momentary lapse of judgment, unfortunately, can commit, regardless of your socioeconomic background. It's a difficult crime. And I'm not certain how you deter it any more than we are. I'm not certain how much more resources you can put on it. And unfortunately, what we've seen is there are a lot of people who don't learn from their mistakes, that they pick up a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth, a seventh OWI. Luckily, what we do see some decrease of people who pick up a first, that take it seriously, who are not predisposed to commit that crime in the future. That may be their only brush, their only run-in with the law. It may happen once, they may learn their lesson. It seems, though, that those folks who pick up their second, we see them very frequently then picking up a third and subsequent after that fact. Domestic violence is equally a crime that I think everyone has been raised from a young age to know, that you don't lay your hands on someone else. You don't lay your hands on a woman under any circumstances. But for whatever reason, people still do. And there are consequences to that offense. And unfortunately, as we've seen just recently in Cambridge, just in the last week, domestic violence has the potential to spill over to homicidal violence very easily. I think the number I saw was in Iowa, maybe 56 cases in the last 10 years that have gone that the homicide was on a spouse. There had to have been warning signs. Are we always going to catch them? No. But I am thrilled to see that we have increased in the state of Iowa our number of domestic violence counselors and resources that are available to individuals who find themselves in that situation. I mean, something as simple as a change, you know, if you go see a physician right now, what's one of the intake questions that they ask you? Do you live in a safe environment? So those type of things, giving individuals the opportunity to seek help if they want it. But a lot of it falls, I never want to blame the victim, but the victim has to take advantage in all circumstances of the aid that is available to them if they want to make a positive change for their life as well.
Thanks to Ed Bull for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.